again. And here I go.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Lookout Landing Podcast. My name is Kate Prusser. I am the managing editor of Lookout Landing. And joining me tonight is Deputy Editor John Troopin. John, how are you?
Doing well.
Very good. And also, staff writer Matthew Robertson. Matthew, how are you?
Doing pretty all right, Kate. Nothing to report on, just kind of living life as it comes at me.
Wise words. So attentive listeners will notice that we have not done a podcast since like the middle of December. And this is my fault because we actually recorded one last week, but I got really busy and did not realize it was my job to edit it this time around. And I have just been so busy with like regular stuff, but then also kind of the Edgar Hall of Fame push and a lot of other things. So we are recording this as kind of a coda, and we're going to mash this together with the one that we recorded last week. And if you notice any weird skips and jumps, that's why, because my editing skills are not great, but I'm going to do what I can. And we're going to get this out because people have been asking about, which honestly is very affirming. Thank you to those of you who've said, where's the podcast? Because
all of our listeners sound like. They're all like this.
Okay, that's not the voice that I did. That's definitely not the voice that I did.
Hey.
Rude. I don't know. I call that voice Chad. I don't
know. Yeah, that's how I read all of your tweets.
This is our heel turn podcast. This is our heel turn addendum.
Alienate the listeners.
Good. That way they'll quit asking us, and I won't feel guilty about not editing the podcast.
We're leaving positive relationships with our audience in 2018 because
absolutely
we haven't put out a podcast
sure,
in 2019.
Sure. It's like we're Marie Kondo tidying up our listener base.
Only treating others with kindness does not spark joy.
No. Providing what the people want.
Yeah, that our listeners are canceled.
Other books
content,
are out.
Content does not spark joy.
Well, there is some content that has sparked joy, and that is.
Oh, look at that transition.
I mean, I just virtually watched the Washington Huskies win in Oregon for the first time in like basically a decade. So, I'm feeling pretty good right now. And my favorite player ever, the reason I love baseball, the reason I am where I am today, doing what I do, Edgar Martinez is a Hall of Famer.
Kate,
I wish I knew how to like make sounds go, so because I would make the sound that goes. I was thinking of applause, but yes, finger guns, sure.
Air horns are unleaving.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't actually know what
it's more of a scream.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
And Kate, I mean, Edgar. You know, I grew up watching Edgar. Obviously, I grew up in the 90s. I watched, the early 2000s Mariners. And, those teams were sort of what stoked my passion for baseball and for the Mariners as I was growing up. But, like, Edgar really was the central sort of tenet of your baseball experience.
Yes.
I mean, I think you've talked about it a little bit on the podcast before. But, like, what really sort of... what was your sort of first experience with baseball, and what was your first experience with Edgar, and like what set Edgar apart for you? Because I think I would love to hear that story.
So my dad has two girls, and he really wanted a boy. Like when I was a little kid, I found a book in my mom's bathroom called "Choosing the Sex of Your Child." And all the pages on how to have a boy were, like, highlighted and turned down, like, dog-eared.
Wow.
Did not get his boy, unfortunately. So I think he, like, sized up me and my sister and was like, oh, I'll take the husky one. And tried to kind of make me into the sporty one. And also my sister like had zero interest in anything. So like I played all the sports and I'm not a great athlete though. Hmm. Like I can do.
I was going to say you described it as Charlie Brown baseball.
Yeah. I played Snoopy soccer and Charlie Brown baseball. And I was always the worst player on the team. And I was also left-handed. So like, a lot of my role was just going up and getting hit by pitch. I led the league in hit by pitch. But, yeah, so it was...
Craig Biggio route to the Hall of Fame. I love it.
To this day, my dad and I, like, we have very different politics. Like, we're very different people. But sort of, it's the thing that we can do together is sports. And when I was younger, you know, we'd sit in front of the TV, the little, you know, it had to be turned with a dial. Like I lived in the age before remotes because I'm so old. And I just remember sitting on the floor in my living room with all my stuffed animals, and each one I had named after a player, and I chose one of my stuffed animals that I thought like represented each player. Like the Ken Griffey Jr. was like this cheetah puppet that I had because it was really fast and he was fast, and I made little name tags for them, and I had little cardboard bases, and I'd sort of keep score with the game by like watching the game and then just moving my stuffed animals around the bases. And the Edgar one, I knew I loved Edgar because I picked my favorite stuffed animal, which was this dragon, to be Edgar. And I just, even from an early age, I kind of understood that like Ken Griffey Jr. was the star, right? Like he was the big deal. But I loved the way that Edgar went about his business. I loved his persona. I loved that every time he came up, he might not get like the big hit, but he would get a hit. And we were talking about this a little before recording, but my favorite tool is the hit tool. I love someone who can just hit and hit and hit and outsmart the pitcher who's doing his best. Like, and Edgar talked about that in one of his interviews after he was elected, that he looks at every at-bat as a competition and you're trying to win the at-bat. And maybe you don't get a big hit, but you take a walk and you help your team in that way. And the idea of the fact that the organization has named the Productive Team Plate Appearance Award after him, and the fact that that gives these players who are maybe a little fringier, like Dean Nevarez, who I really like, a catcher we took out of San Diego State, I want to say.
I believe that's correct.
I think so. He's a really cool backstory, too. He's the one whose dad got shot in Tijuana, and he, like, made all the arrangements to get him medical care in the U.S. and while he was playing college baseball. Like, really kind of an amazing story. Cool kid. Yeah.
Bilingual.
Yeah. Huge leader, catcher. And he gets an invite to spring training, even though he was drafted like just this past year, because he led the organization in productive plate appearances. Mm-hmm. And I just think that idea of like being, not just living for your own stats, but like being a great teammate, helping. Yeah, it's like service learning or being community service journalism, which is a lot of what I think we want to practice at the site, giving people something, the importance of giving back and being a good citizen and being a good teammate. Those values are really important to me. And I could just tell, you know, at 8 years old, I knew that Edgar was a good teammate, and he's continued to live his life in that way and just always offering a hand up, whether it was helping younger prospects. He used to have them into his living room in Dorado, Puerto Rico. You know, people would come from all over the island to listen to him teach, to him being the hitting coach, to the work that he's done. He did a lot of work supporting teachers, which obviously education is very important to me. A lot with foundations trying to get teachers of color, Hispanic teachers into the classroom. I mean, he is as great. Everyone always says like, oh, great person, great player. But Edgar truly is the best of both. He is one of the best players, but also one of the best people. And I'm just so proud he was ours.
That's pretty good.
That's yeah, pretty it's tough to good. Follow that. But I will try. So
good, Matthew. Shoot your shot, baby.
I'm
getting shots up no matter what.
Go for
okay,
it,
David Crisp.
Yeah. So my like early baseball experience came from when I was like 3 or 4 years old. My family's house was being built, so we lived with my grandparents for a little bit. And my grandpa was retired at the time, so he was watching like 150 Mariners games a year. And I would just sit next to him on the couch and kind of take it all in. And I remember he would always make fun of Edgar for being slow. He would say Edgar was Cadillac-ing because in my grandpa's mind, if you have a Cadillac, you want to drive slow so as much people can see you as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So he would always make jokes about Edgar Cadillac-ing.
And I was like, thing or is that just your grandpa?
It's a grandpa-ism
that's
for sure.
That is fantastic. I'm stealing that. My grandpa also drove a Cadillac, so
there you go.
Yeah.
But so yeah, I mean, obviously I was drawn to him being good at baseball and also kind of like I remember my early Mariner experience, it was like a lot of the late 90s, so like Edgar, I remember really liking A-Rod, and I would talk about how creamy his skin was. It was like very like I don't know, like young A-Rod had amazing skin and he still does have good skin, but I just remember being drawn to like a lot of the like black and brown players. So like Brian Hunter was in there as well. But when you're that young, like for me, like they took on kind of like mythical beings because I was so little and like watching them on TV. So like Edgar was like that. And then obviously like you learned what the double was. And I was like, oh my God, like he did like the coolest thing that the Mariners have ever done. And he didn't seem real. And then I honestly don't have like a whole lot of distinct memories. I have much more memories of the other three guys who were elected, if we're being honest, just because they kind of overlapped with my like serious baseball watching. But so I remember like learning about the double. And then I remember Edgar in the 01 playoffs hitting a bunch of home runs against the Indians. And then him taking that lap around the field when he retired and like giving everyone a high five. So he almost like existed in this like other world where it's like, yeah, I understand that he's on my favorite team and I was watching him for so long, but it never really clicked that he was like a real person until he joined the organization later as the hitting coach. And I saw him kind of like take a step back and be like more human than the players who are actually playing the game and kind of being like the superheroes. He was just the guy who like was the teacher, kind of like Kate touched on a little bit. So that was sort of my Edgar like interactions. My guy, like similar to how Edgar was kind of Kate's guy, my guy was Felix, just because that was like the era I grew up in. And Edgar was like sort of the one before, like the respected elder almost. But I mean, I definitely.
Or as Malik Smith referred to him today, a T-Rex. Yeah. Which huge.
Which is fantastic.
It's
I'm
fantastic.
A big fan.
I can't believe. I mean, and I feel like anyone else that would have made me so mad. But there's something about Malik Smith. So we're referring to the press conference today, the media day that happened, which we'll touch on as well. Malik Smith was one of the three players who was talking, and Edgar came up because, of course, he's kind of on people's minds right now. And I want to say it was maybe Bob Dutton. It was one of the older reporters who was asking, like, oh, haha, you know, I looked up to Edgar and Griffey, but those guys are like a generation past you guys, right? And Malik just kind of ran with it and started calling them the T-Rexes, which is like, it was so charming that it was like, it's really kind of insulting, I think, like the way that like Malik's can get away with it in some way. I don't know. I mean, maybe he's going to get an angry call from Junior later. Like, what do you mean calling me a dinosaur? But I don't know. It is
a power
to
move
about,
to
though. It's
like first day,
right?
Just
first
come in.
Day.
And
first
the guy
day.
Just got into the Hall of Fame, and he's like, "Yeah,
right.
You're a dinosaur.
Right.
Step aside, old man."
in an organization that you are in for the second time, having been traded away your first time 27 minutes into your tenure or whatever, right?
I mean, like, he is literally 20 years younger than the person who's going to be his backup, at least on opening day. So, like, I feel like maybe his read on dinosaurs in this organization is pretty spot on.
But Malik is on brand. He did say that he gives zero fucks, and that's why he wears number zero.
I wouldn't want
him to say that and then be like really buttoned up in interviews. Like that wouldn't track. That's fair. So
he's living his truth.
He is.
John, what is give us your Edgar story stuff.
I don't have quite as gripping of a story, but I mean my coming to love baseball was in large part similarly with my dad. My mom also loved baseball. You know, she grew up in Chicago, was a huge Ernie Banks fan, but you know, like I learned to read reading box scores with my dad in the morning before school, and like it was always, you know, I learned the entire Mariners lineup, and I learned all their batting stances, and I would, you know, stand and play you know, a game essentially where I would act out their each hitter in the lineup, and then my dad would chuck like Nerf ball, and then, you know, and Edgar was just always, you know, I mean, it was Edgar, and it was Griffey.
Oh, shout out to Young Flip, who comes to LL Softball, who had all of the 2018 Mariner stances down.
Absolutely.
Remember that?
Absolutely. So that was fantastic. Oh, I mean, it's such a fun little bit of style that baseball has to offer.
Edgar's got a great stance, too, for impersonating. It's so distinct.
Yeah.
So that was exactly, I mean, that's exactly what I was going to get to. Is like, you know, I obviously, like, he was incredible to watch. It was wonderful to, you know, I recall loving it, but just that, like, very slowly rock the bat over his head and back stance was just so simply evocative, and it was so just cool, calm, and boom, I got you. Like, you threw it up and in, I got you. You threw it low and away, I got you. Like, even just like remembering the way that he'd have the way that he would pine tar his bat so that it looked like almost the entire part of his bat that was left was barrel.
Yeah.
It's such a vivid image in my head of, oh, you're never going to jam him. All that you have to do is, you know, all that he has there is just the best part
just
of the bat.
Barrel. And John, I have a question.
Yes.
So I, again, stalled out at Charlie Brown Baseball, so mm-hmm. not a hitting expert. I have a book that Edgar wrote, heavy quotation marks around wrote,
sure.
from 1992, mm-hmm. called Patience Pays. It's a children's mm-hmm. book in which Edgar gives his hitting tips. Mm-hmm. And the hitting tip is like, hit the ball where it is.
Yep.
Which sounds really simple, but he's like, if it's inside, try to pull it. Mm-hmm. If it's over the plate, hit it up the middle. Mm-hmm. If it's off the plate, try to hit it oppo. And like, that seems really... Why doesn't everybody just do that? Like, hit the ball where it is. Why doesn't every MLB hitter just hit the ball where it is?
Why don't they get a hit every time? They're
fucking
idiots.
Why don't they get a hit every time? This seems so simple.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. It's what made him so remarkable was that, you know, you could fool him and you could overpower him. Those were sort of the two, you know, if you had a really remarkable breaking pitch, you could fool him because he would recognize essentially, he was just so good and he trained it so hard that he would recognize the pitch so early, and his mechanics were that good that he would just get his barrel to the ball every time. And I mean, it's interesting, even if you just look at the players that he dominated, I mean, you know, we obviously talked a ton about Mariano Rivera, but like, that was the thing, was like, everyone knew what Mariano Rivera was going to do, and almost no one could do anything about it. And Edgar could get his hands through every single time. You know, Edgar was unfazed by Mo, every single time. The pitchers who, the two pitchers who sort of most notably gave him trouble were Pedro and Nolan Ryan. And that is, you know, Pedro Martinez, everything moved a ton and was faster than it had any right to be, especially in that era. And Nolan Ryan, who threw actually 100 every time, you know, when everyone was like, oh yeah, that person throws 100. No, Nolan Ryan actually throws 100 and no one else knows what is going on. And, you know, it's like everyone else, like, you know, just he crushes Tim Hudson. He crushes Tom, you know, all these unbelievable players. You couldn't get it by him. And it was, you know, a lot of people, I think, sort of have less, you know, less connection to the Hall of Fame than maybe they did when they were younger, because it's the type of thing that you care about more when you're younger, because it seems sort of majestic and grandiose, and almost everything when you get older is a little bit less of that as you grow more jaded. And I think that's understandable, and I think that's fair, but there's something still powerful and meaningful about seeing something you love and have known to be important and have known to be deserving and hardworking and all these things, and just to see that recognized by most people is, I mean, you know, that and have the majority of people say, yes, this person was exceptional and we should remember them forever.
And it's pretty inspiring that it happened after like years of work. Like, at, you know, famously, he wasn't getting a whole lot of votes. And then it took kind of like a grassroots effort for people to be like, no, actually, he was great. And he, like, look at his numbers against all these great pitchers and, you know, all these numbers that, you know, only he's accomplished. Like, there's some, I don't know them off the top of my head, but there was the one where it was like, all these benchmarks, like, with only one team, and it was, like, Edgar and Willie Mays and, like, maybe Cal Ripken or something. Everyone's like, oh, my God, okay, like, we can all agree that, you know, Willie Mays and Edgar, or, I mean, Willie Mays and Cal Ripken are great. Like, Edgar did the same thing and did it forever. And I was reading, I've been doing sort of, like, the Hall of Fame content consumption, and I came across, there's this Tom Verducci Sports Illustrated story from like 2010 about Roy Halladay, and he interviews a bunch of hitters from the AL East who had faced him a million times, like Derek Jeter and Brian Roberts. And they were like, he's so hard to hit because you don't, like, you see the pitch coming and then it can break either way. And, like, you know, you're guessing cutter and then it's actually a sinker or whatever. And I feel like Edgar would be like, no, you idiots, like, just hit it wherever it goes. Like, don't guess. You know, Edgar doesn't strike me as a guess hitter.
No.
Like, just wait and then hit it wherever it ends up.
Right.
Like, Jeter was, I think Jeter's quote was like, you know, you're selling out for the cutter and then it dives at you and, you know, you swing right over it. And, you know, Brian Roberts talks about how he hit a million ground balls to the second baseman or something because he was just always getting these pitches that he was rolling over on. And I just, like, when I was reading that and then kind of, you know, taking it all in the lens of, like, Edgar, because it's just, you know, that Hall of Fame group will be connected forever. And I was just thinking, like, that doesn't seem like something that Edgar would relate to. It'd be like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think Edgar was up there trying to guess.
Edgar would never sell out for anything.
Right. And he would just, you know, do that, like, almost tennis swing where it's like, I'm just going to serve this, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, very much so. Do you guys, so I recall reading about Albert Pujols sort of earlier in his career. I mean, when he was an established just god of baseball. But and remembering reading this and thinking back on it, how similar, and in fact, it really was to Edgar, in that Pujols discussed sort of his philosophy and that what he would try to do was sort of divide the strike zone into essentially like 9 quadrants. And that he would try and see, you know, each pitch and sort of gauge it towards which quadrant it was headed for. And based on that, that would be sort of his determinant on, like, how he was going to react to the pitch. And you know, that's the type of thing that you... The trouble with that and the trouble with things like that, like players like Edgar, where it's like, you think about it and you think, like, oh, that's really smart, I should try and do that. You're not going to be able to do that.
No, like, I mean, honestly,
Edgar is special, you know, like
I even am not so sure about the claim that, like, oh, I'm dividing the strike zone into 9 quad. Like, maybe right. Pujols has that amazing kind of spatial perception, but
right.
That seems like an insanely small amount. That seems like slicing the ham very, very thin in a way that I feel is impossible to do in real time. But
I agree. But I think that's the sort of, like, I think you're 100% correct. I mean, just, like, reaction time-wise, you cannot do that. But I do think that it's the sort of mentality of, that's the way you prepare, and then when you're reacting in the game, that's the way that you've trained yourself. And I think that Edgar was very similar in that way of just the preparation was so meticulous and so particular that it maximized everything he was capable of, and that's a wonderful thing to see. And that doesn't make the way that other players do things worse. You know, it just was awesome to watch in every way. And he was awesome to watch in every way. And the fact that every single person who has spoken with him and has spoken about him has said, yes, you know, I mean, he's exactly the person that you think he would be, or yes, even more. I mean, the Dave Niehaus quote, you know, he's every, whether you've met him or whether you haven't, he's everyone's best friend. He's exactly the person you would hope he would be. I mean,
yeah, never what meet more your could heroes. You ever want never meet hero? Your heroes unless your hero is Edgar Martinez, who I did good. Meet when I was like 10, 12, something like that. He was doing a signing at the Factoria Square Mall, and I went with my dad, who sucks at time, does not, like, understand time. Yeah, he's always been his own businessman, and he's not, like, respond to anyone else's schedules other than his own. So we got there late, and they were, like, closing things down, and Edgar was leaving. And I was ready to just go home. I was so mad at him, you know, that we'd gone and done this thing, and I was so excited about it, and then we had left late, and I was so pissed. I was just ready to go home. And my dad went up and, like, kind of interceded, and Edward was like, of course, and he made all this time. And, like, when I got to talk to him, and I said, you know, I'm a big fan, and you're my favorite player, and, you know, whatever I said, I don't remember it at this time, but I do remember just how, like, time stopped. And it didn't matter that he was leaving. It didn't matter that all around us they were, like, pulling the cloth off the tables and folding up these big tables and stacking away the cards and, like, kind of, you know, trying to urge him on. He just took all the time I wanted to have. He talked to me as long as I wanted to talk to him. And he was wonderful.
Still that time stopped thing really resonates. It's, like, such a weird feeling when you're around someone who's, like, has that sort of magnetism to them, and you're like, I don't know if that was 10 minutes or an hour. Like,
yes. Yeah.
I was in college. I got to the Warriors played a preseason game in San Diego, and I got to cover it. And I just literally, like, I didn't even have, like, an angle or anything for, like, being, I got there with a Lakers credential because it was a Warriors Lakers game, but I just, like, hung out in the bowels of the arena to be around the Warriors. And, sure, like, eventually I was, like, sort of just lingering and, like, in, like, a very, like, offhand conversation with, like, Curry and Durant and Klay Thompson. And I was like, I don't know, like, that could have been the shortest conversation ever, or that could have been, like, 3 hours, and I would have had no idea. And that thing that, that you said about Pujols and, like, the way that he apparently divides the quadrants up while he's hitting. Like, that's one of those things when I hear stuff like that where I'm always like, that's kind of how you know someone is, like, really, really great, when, like, they're just able to say stuff like that. And you're like, okay, well, I know that wouldn't work for me.
Physically impossible.
Yeah, but, it's like how when you hear, like,
actually do that.
Like, when you hear that, like, Jay-Z doesn't write any of his raps, and you're like, what? Like, I could sit down for a year and try to write raps, and they'd be half as good as his, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's just like, oh, yeah, you know, you just do it. Like, you just have this thing. Like, just try this, and then you try it, and you're like, well, that's impossible. And it just mm-hmm. speaks to how good they are at yeah. that specific mm-hmm. thing. Like, you would never teach anyone to hold the bat over their head like Edgar did. Like, mm-hmm. that doesn't seem like a good stance at all. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it worked for him, and he was mm-hmm. so good at it that, like, you just have to kind of tip your hat and be like, yeah, you're the greatest. Keep doing that.
Yeah. And it's all impressive, too, when you think about the fact that Edgar did all of this with an eye condition that required strabismus mm-hmm. or whatever it is, that required him to... He just had to work harder than he had to outwork everyone else. And maybe that's why he was so great. Like, I mean, maybe when you have that limitation, it mm-hmm. forces you to work a little harder and you get an edge from it.
I think that's almost because the connection for Pujols and for Edgar is almost that it seemed like for them, they were going at like 75% speed. And, you know, that once, you know, the pitch came in, it just, you know, it never was too fast. It never was breaking too late. Mm. You know, I mean, obviously Pujols is a disaster now, but, like, anyone who can remember 2004 to 2012, where it was just it was impossible. It was impossible to watch Pujols hit, and it really felt pretty similar to watch Edgar. You know, Edgar didn't have quite the same power, but it was otherwise it was pretty much the same. I mean, it was just, oh, you know, this pitch is anywhere in the zone, he got it. He, like, got the barrel to it.
When you hear that cliche, slowing the game down, right? Yes. Like, oh, I'm learning to slow the game down. I've always been like, what is that? Like, what does that mean? It's like, go about one's business. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that those are the two baseball cliches I've probably heard the most is like, mm-hmm. oh, I need to learn how to go about my business. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm. Or trying to be a professional.
Slow the game down. Yeah. Try to be right. But I think that's what we're talking about, right? Pujols, yeah. Edgar, yeah. They were able to slow the game down.
And I think, I mean, it's pure speculation at this point, but I mean, the idea of that Edgar, because he had this condition almost, that he had to essentially adopt a position of being a reactor, you know, of saying, you know, well, I'm not going to, I can't guess, because if I guess wrong, I'm going to look foolish. Mm-hmm. You know, that I have to be a beat slower, but because of that, but that will allow me to be right. And if I'm right, you know, if I'm right in what I do, I just have to do what I do perfectly. And he was so consistent, I think, as a result of that. And yeah, I mean,
patience pays. The book does not lie. The book title does not lie. It's apparently $54 on Amazon.
Holy smokes.
So I would tell you to go buy it. But if anyone is interested, I will scan my copy and you can all read it that way.
Oh, yeah. Bring down the book.
Speaking of cliches, we had the media day today,
mm-hmm.
Which always, anytime baseball people are in a room, they are going to spout a certain amount of cliches. I watched and blurbed the whole spectacle for our readers. Were either of you able to watch any of it? Did you?
No,
I did
no,
not.
Ma'am. I followed your updates and followed Shannon Dreyer's.
Okay, so this segment is just going to be me talking.
Yes, please.
Yeah, ice okay.
Okay, ice okay.
We're calling the clear out.
I wrote literally. This is now my third one of them, I think, because I'm pretty sure I did 2017. I've not been able to find it. We as a staff did 2018.
Mm-hmm.
This one I sat down and watched and then was keeping... I had sort of an article open and was just typing furiously the whole time. obviously there were some things that, you know, just general housekeeping things that we heard about the field conditions. They're redoing all the sod after Enchant. We saw some cool things that are going to be coming up this next year, like special nights, fireworks nights, Edgar Hall Fame Weekend, obviously. We have all of this listed in the article you can go look at the Mariners Twitter. They have all of this. But after that, we were supposed to hear from Jerry Dipoto, but he was off making a trade for Hunter Strickland.
Signing him.
Yep, sorry. Signing him, not making a trade. So Andy McKay talked for a while about the farm system, and then we heard from Dipoto came back, and then Service, and then Malik Smith, new Mariners, Malik Smith, Justice Sheffield, and J.P. Crawford all talked. It was lengthy, and there was a lot of information that came out. I will say that some of my big takeaways were, one of the things that I heard a lot was we were getting back to the control the zone philosophy, which is great, I think. They really pushed that hard in the first year in 2016. We saw a big uptick in players taking more walks, in pitchers not giving up those walks and getting strikeouts, and then that just kind of seemed to go by the wayside a little bit in 2017 and was completely lost in 2018. Apparently, in the words of Scott Service, Ryan Healy will find his pitches this year. D. Gordon will take more pitches this year.
Well, it's settled.
I mean,
yeah,
he's promising it. I don't know that, but it did. And Jerry said it as well, that both of them were kind of leaning on this importance of getting back to the control of the zone. I will be interested to track that over this year. Generally, when they say something, when they make the time to say something, which they didn't address control of the zone at all in 2017 or 2018. So, was it
definitely 2018 was less.
Oh, I think maybe 2016.
Because 2016 was now. Control of the zone. That was the first year of it.
2017, they moved away from it. In 2018, it was totally gone.
I mean, they got D. Gordon and Ryan Healy. So.
Yeah, it was gone. Yeah. It was way gone. So that was one of my big takeaways.
The zone was out of control.
Andy McKay talked. Obviously, Andy McKay is... I appreciate Andy McKay as a fellow educator. I appreciate that Andy McKay is never going to be like, this person is a prospect and this is organizational filler. He treats everyone like they are prospects, and I think that is super important. So he wasn't willing to say that, you know, somebody set him up with kind of a softball question about how much the farm system had improved, and he would not bite. But he did kind of admit it was exciting to work with people who have a certain reputation in the industry. That was as far as he was willing to go.
That is a hell of a couch.
Yeah, that's as far as he was willing to go. He was not willing to say, like, oh, the farm system is so much better now. And honestly, I respect the hell out of that, because when you say, we're so much better now than we were then, you are inherently disrespecting the guys who have been here the whole time. Like, you are, whether you want to call them organizational filler or not, like, those are dudes, and they are important to your organization, too, and it is disrespectful to act like they are nothing. So I appreciate that from Andy McKay. And then the third big takeaway was, this was the first time we saw Dipoto and McKay, and actually Service somehow avoided being asked about this, but we saw them directly asked about the Lorena Martin accusations. And unequivocally, the response was, I did not do that. That is not who I am. But I was very interested in Dipoto saying that he took full responsibility for the situation because it was his program and it was his hire and it was his implementation. And that was something that I really needed to hear. Like, I needed to hear Dipoto take accountability for whether her... And we're operating under the assumption that the Mariners are not lying when they come out and say, I did not do that. Then that's an appropriate response. If they are, and if the accusations prove to have weight behind them, then that's a different conversation. But just kind of going off of what is being said, I think that that's something that I really wanted to hear. It was not just like, we're vindicated and justice will prevail, but some measure of taking of accountability. So for me, that felt... And they're limited in what they can say because it is an open investigation. But just hearing that DePoto recognizes that there was a mistake made or many mistakes made mm-hmm. in how, and him being willing to take accountability for that really felt reassuring to me.
Yeah, I think that's, at the very least, the type of thing that we had sort of wanted to see if they were willing to do. And, you know, it's certainly easier to take responsibility when you have a contract extension. And
ha, good point.
But, you know, if we can find something within what Dr. Martin says that really sort of sticks, then it doesn't matter whatsoever.
Absolutely. That's a whole other... Personally, I'm feeling like the possibility of that is dwindling.
Like yeah, not even that it's made up or that it's not, but just that there will be any sort of resolution that
we get to
MLB
see.
Right. Or
yeah.
The legal system will find in her, which yeah, I mean, you know, it, I don't know. There's still no good answer, and there's still no real good outcome.
Still no good outcome.
But you know, the Mariners at the minimum just sort of taking sort of responsibility. And starting to take responsibility is
DePoto
is
said
a
he was
half step in the right direction.
DePoto said he was embarrassed about how things turned out, and I think that's a good. Yeah, he should be.
Yeah.
Because whether or not these things are have a basis in fact, it is an embarrassing situation. It made the organization look bad.
Yeah.
And then meanwhile, he's, you know, in this offseason particularly, seems like he's making a conscious effort almost to just acquire a bunch of black players. Which
yep,
is like
let's talk about that.
It's a very rare thing in today's game to like have, what is it, like 6 or 7 black dudes on the 40-man mm-hmm. roster, or at least like close to the 40-man roster, including now, I guess, Shed Long, who's the newest acquisition to the Mariners.
Yes, indeed.
System. So, I mean, yeah, that is, it's something that I've definitely noticed. Like, I don't think he's ever going to address it and be like, 2019 Mariners, like, bigger and blacker or anything like that. but like, it is something that is happening.
Chris Rock is canceled. We're taking it back.
Yeah. Jerry DePoto is announcing his I'm Not Racist tour. But yeah, I mean, it is like, it's exciting, I think. And they all, like, I think, you know, to generalize a little bit here, like, a sort of common thread between a lot of young white players is they're, like, just going to be the cliche machine and, like, not say anything, you know, that's going to even be remotely considered disrespectful. And then, meanwhile, like we said, Malik Smith on his first day had the two best players in franchise history, T-Rexes. And, like, you know, they're already talking about their dogs. Like, that was one of the few things that I have seen from the media day. And, like, they just seem like they are having fun. And, like, that's so refreshing to see, not only for, you know, black
Matthew,
players,
did
but
you,
for
did,
any players.
Matthew, did you pull that number of 6 on the 40-man from your head? Or did you, have you counted
that? Was off
that?
The dome. Did I get
that,
it correct?
You absolutely did, which is impressive. It is
That has
6.
To be the most
is it 6?
Of any team.
It is 6. It is It is. Wait, did I?
I thought it was five.
No, because it's Malick's.
Yep.
It is Shedlong.
Yep.
It's Crawford. It's three. Beckham.
Yep.
It's Justice.
Yep.
And
Justin Dunn is not on the 40 man. Oh, damn. But Justin Dunn.
Did you say D. Gordon?
Oh, we didn't say D. Gordon. Yeah.
We didn't say D. Gordon.
Oh, fuck.
Yep. So there you go. That's it.
I will admit I already forgot about Tim Beckham, but he is on the team, so we welcome him with open arms.
Yes. Yeah, Justice, Tim, Crawford, D. Shed, and Malick's. Yep, six. 6 out of 40, by the way, is 15%, which is double, because I think the last thing I saw said that MLB has a rate of about 6% African-American.
Yeah, 6 or 7 is like what they've, is what they put it at.
So 15 on the 40 man, plus, as we've mentioned, you have Justin Dunn, you have Dom Thompson Williams, you have some other guy, you have Art Warren, who liked our tweet about the fact that the three faces that they put forward, the three new faces of the Mariners, are all black. But yeah, the Mariners are getting very diverse, which is super ironic, I think, for an extremely white city. There's African Americans. There's the only Tongan player in MLB, Sam Tuivailala. The first and only Tongan player of Tongan descent, I should say.
Yeah,
I think he's half Tongan, half Mexican.
But,
I believe that's correct.
Was born and raised in San Mateo, California.
Yes, yeah, for sure. But I mean, is very proud of his Tongan heritage,
of course,
as he should be. We've got, you know, obviously the Latino players,
Domingo,
Edwin,
Yerson now.
We've
Ichiro
got Kikuchi.
Is still in the mix.
Ichiro, sure. I think that they're folding that back in. And even among the Latin countries, you know, they have players from Panama. They have players from Venezuela. They have players
Brazil.
From Brazil. My child, Gun Omasako. Chris
Isn't
Pedral,
there a Taiwanese
pretty...
player, too?
Yes, that is Chang?
Ching Yu Chang.
Yeah.
Who is at spring training right now and hilariously living
roommates.
With Cal Raleigh and Logan Gilbert.
Doing the baby shark dance.
Doing baby shark, yes. I will post that. I will put, remind me to put that, remind me to put that in the story. It feels a little like 2016 again, where there was like a really exciting infusion. But the idea of D, so we lost Nelson Cruz, who was a key leader, clubhouse leader. It really, you look at all three of those guys, all three of them today said that D had texted them. Shed Long, who is our newest Mariner, acquired because Jerry can't keep his nose out of a trade.
Mm-hmm.
We sent Josh Storrs, also African American. Big bummer. Sad to have lost him. But flipped him for Shedlong, who is pretty cool in his own way. Also really good friends, works out with D during the off season. So the idea of D Gordon clubhouse leader, I feel pretty good about. I feel really good about D Gordon clubhouse leader.
Yeah, it's gonna be a fun vibe for sure.
Like, it's
not that Nelson Cruz wasn't fun, but
no, but Justice said when D called him immediately after he was traded and talked to him about the locker room and said, like, oh, man, it's so fun. Like, we have so much fun here. And Justice said, like, yeah, that's me. Like, he doesn't want to be uptight. He loves that kind of relaxed, playful vibe. I think it's going to be a really good clubhouse culture. And I like the idea of D as the leader. I think you can say what you want about him on the field. D. Gordon's a good person. And
oh, absolutely.
He is 100% a leader. He is who I want leading a clubhouse. And I think it's really cool to have an African-American clubhouse leader. I think it's really cool to have D be that person. I'm excited. I've been really writing off 2019 I'm super excited about what's happening at the lower levels. Obviously, I love Julio. I love Jared Kelnick. Like, I like that younger wave we have. And I've been willing to kind of be like, 2019, whatever. But I'm starting to get a little excited about what this team might look like over the next couple years.
Totally. We're even getting some Jared personality, too. On Twitter, yeah, he's been, like, making jokes and, like, he tweeted about J. Cole. Like, he's showing his wide range of interests.
He's really trying. He's trying so hard to have a personality. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that about him.
I do want to really quickly just touch on Shed Long before we go.
Yes, please do.
We're wrapping up here. Obviously, it's been a sort of megapod. But the Mariners traded Josh Stowers for Shed Long. He's great. This is a good trade for the Mariners. I mean, obviously it could work out, you know, poorly, but just on its face, it's a good trade for the Mariners. Stowers is a good player, could be a solid major league player at some point. I hope he is, because seems great. But Shed Long's very talented. He is able to play second base, probably can play outfield, probably can play a couple infield spots, probably not shortstop, but they're intending to use him at third base as well, see what he can do over there. Converted catcher, so he's got the arm. But, I mean, just a legitimate hitter and a really interesting player and a really interesting person. And
earned my love forever for saying when he was traded to the Yankees, he was like, well, I kind of knew that wasn't, what am I going to do with the Yankees? That's like baseball Mecca. Seattle's a much better fit. I was like, okay, low expectations, the right way to come to the Seattle Mariners.
Absolutely. But I mean, just, you know, has that sort of same, just has hit at every level, kind of vibe and is a, I mean, plays a position that the Mariners don't have.
No, really, they got much nothing. Else
at. Middle
Stores,
infield.
Stores was sad to see go, but we got nothing on middle infield.
There are plenty of outfielders, and especially, I think once this season starts going, we're going to see this person's performing, this person's also performing. The Mariners will move. There still isn't much or anything really at third base, and there still isn't much in the way of starting pitching depth. So, you know, the Mariners are going to have to fill in some of those holes with money, and they will. And some of those holes are going to have to be filled in through the draft and through development, and some of those holes will have to be filled in with trades. And this is the first sort of step of that, of, okay, we're going to hopefully get something out of having a surplus of talented outfielders, and Shed Long we should see probably in 2019. If not, then we'll see him in 2020, and we'll see him and D. Gordon playing together. And it's, we're going to have some events at the Tacoma Rainiers Stadium this year, because it's going to be a lot of fun to watch a lot of these people, and it's going to be cheap. So, and
Tacoma is going to be literally, other than in past years, it has just kind of been a collection of dudes.
Burgo,
yeah, Christian Bergman.
Who's the big beard guy? Who's Evans? Was that his name?
He was in Double A. Brian Evans.
Yeah,
you're thinking of Brian Evans. I'm pretty sure he was Double A, but. Anyway, they have collected a lot of kind of cast-offs from other, or, you know, Andreoli, Cam Perkins. I mean, guys who, you know, fringe guys hoping for a breakout. Tacoma's going to have actual prospects, which is not something we've seen over the past 3 years, probably. Mm. So that's going to be really exciting. It's definitely a great time to be a Rainier season ticket holder.
Yes.
Get down there as much as you can. Great place to take the family. So that's my plug for that. I personally am excited to have so many prospects that we can all have sons. Like, Jared is our strong son, and Shed is our glasses wearing son.
Goggles Son. These are Bo Outlaw Son.
Goggles Son. Matthew, I know you love Nicholas Zamorelli III. Down in, gonna hopefully make it to AA this year. He is our Italian Stallion Son.
Yep, Nikki Three Sticks. Nikki, if you're three listening,
we love you.
Yeah, I've seen you play countless times.
Ian Miller is our slender adult son. Just all of them. All of them are our sons. So. It's pretty exciting. Justice is our short king son.
Sam
the disproportionate body.
Yes. Mama, why you give me this disproportionate body? So it's pretty exciting. Like, there's going to be something fun to watch this year. I don't know what it's going to be. If it's going to be at the major league level, the minor league level, it's going to be something fun. So stay tuned.
Mm-hmm.
All right. My show's coming on. I gotta go. Right. We're gonna try to seamlessly stitch this together with other things.
They won't know. No one's gonna know. This is gonna be a spectacular.
Yeah, we're gonna see how it goes.